Ben allowed Taryn to lead the way out into the adit, then stepped to her side and asked, "What happened on the Dragon Queen?"
"It sounds like a nano killer," Taryn answered. "The Queen took some prisoners aboard. Half an hour later, puffs of silver mist started coming out of the ventilation system and taking down anyone with royal blood."
"But everyone else is okay?" Ben asked.
Taryn looked over.
"There was a lot of royal blood on the Queen, Ben."
"I know," Ben answered. "But someone's gotta be alive. Not everyone aboard had royal blood, so how come no one's telling us what happened to Tenel Ka? If she's dead, they ought to know it for sure."
"You think Her Majesty survived," Taryn surmised. "Alana, too."
"I think they could've," Ben said hopefully. "Tenel Ka would have sensed trouble coming, and she's been keeping Alana very close to her."
The mouth of the tunnel appeared ahead, a black arch where the ceiling light simply ended, and Taryn looked away.
"It's the way we do things," Taryn said. "When a queen mother dies, we like to keep things uncertain for a while. It gives us a chance to tighten up security around potential successors and to see which one seems a little too prepared to take her place."
"Like Ducharakud," Ben said. "I guess that makes sense. But who's we exactly?"
Taryn did not look over.
"Who do you think, Ben?"
"I have no idea."
"Good,"
Taryn said, putting her night vision goggles back on.
"It would have been a shame to kill you."
Ben put on his own goggles and followed her out into the night, where they met a dozen male commandos and started down the terrace toward their intercept point. The commandos were quiet, but not quite silent, and when they drew within 200 meters of the objective, Taryn signaled them to slow down and move more carefully. She took Ben and continued forward, then crept into a cane thicket at the edge of a terrace and peered down into the forest.
"There," Ben whispered, pointing. "Coming toward us."
Taryn slipped out of the thicket and angled down toward the point where they expected to intercept the enemy, which Ben guessed would be about where the forest met the slope. The ground was still muddy enough that he and Taryn were leaving an easy trail to follow. By the time Ben and Taryn reached the bottom of the slope, he could hear the soft whisper of leaves and branches rubbing against plastoid armor. He dropped behind a fallen kalg tree next to Taryn and peered out through the underbrush, hiding his presence in the force. It was only a matter of time before Tahiri felt Taryn and the commandos, but at least she would not realize that they were accompanied by a Jedi. Fortunately, Tahiri seemed to be concentrating on other things for the moment. She emerged from the forest at the head of the column, an infrared silhouette with one hand outstretched, her palm turned downward as though feeling something rising from the ground. Behind her came a line of about a dozen stormtroopers, the four in the middle carrying a litter with a metal cone resting in the center. Ben thought the cone might be a canister full of remnant nanokiller, until he saw a set of colored lights blinking in a 3 red, 2 yellow, 1 green pattern that he had been trained to recognize early in his days as GAG anti-terrorist operative, a Beridium warhead. Ben touched Taryn's forearm and directed her attention to the warhead and felt her muscles tense beneath his grasp. Even a small Beridium warhead would be powerful enough to blow the top off the entire ridge, and a warhead that required 4 men to carry it wasn't small. Tahiri stopped about 15 meters away, in the center of a treeless circle of underbrush, and motioned the stormtrooper behind her to stop.
"I think this is it," she said. "Bring up the penetration charges, but keep that warhead back. We don't want to detonate it just trying to get into the tunnels."